It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. We're back to 2 hours. 2 hours of Money Matters to talk about some of the most exciting topics that I can think about all year long. We save them for the end of the year as we go into 2018 with the potential for a tax bill to be done. We told you this summer when there was all the fodder about, well, the Republicans can't get anything passed. They can't do health care. There's no way they're going to be able to do tax reform. Yet here we are with a consensus in Congress with enough votes, it seems, as of Friday. All they have to do this week is go through with the final vote, get it to the president's desk. That could all be happening this week. And what does that mean for markets? Another grind higher. Dow Jones up 1.3% on the week. S&P 500 up almost 1% on the week. All in the anticipation that, hey, wait a minute, this thing's going to actually happen. And if this actually happens, again, another thing we've been talking about, it's going to add between 5 and 10% to what companies earn in 2018. Profits go up almost 10% right out of the gate. Not priced in. All of a sudden, getting priced in. UBS strategist this week talked about it in Barron's, thinking S&P 500 earnings going up 7 to 9%. We've been saying that for a half a year now. And the market's finally sniffing that out and moving higher. What fascinates me is that 42 economists, out of 42 economists, 41 of them believe that tax reform won't actually help the economy. You heard me correctly. Out of 42 economists, 41 of them think that this bill isn't going to do anything for the economy. Have they looked at what happened in 2003? When we got arguably a much smaller tax cut? Have they looked at what history did in 2003 and 4 and 5, by the way? The uptick was unmistakable when we had the Bush tax cut. So the Tax Reform Act of 2003, remarkable amount of economic growth. You can argue where it came from. But directly following the tax cuts in 2003, we had serious economic growth. These are the two topics. Well, so we're going to talk about that today. We're going to also talk about probably the best research conference I've been at all year. I spent a lot of last week in Washington, D.C., several days in our nation's capital, learning about the federal defense and intelligence budget, aerospace and defense companies, along with some of the most prominent defense technology companies. And if you have ever worried about the U.S., our country, falling behind its competitors and its enemies, our enemies, or really just falling behind anyone for that matter, spend some time with these companies. Spend some time with these firms, and you will feel better about what our country, alongside the private sector, is doing to protect this nation. Remarkable progress. Remarkable amount of research. Very, very smart people staying ahead of what is this rapidly evolving set of threats to our nation's security. So I met with, again, and this is what's interesting about this. A lot of these names we don't know as Americans. You know about the big names. You've heard of Northrop Grumman. You heard of Lockheed Martin. You know Boeing, which isn't specifically a defense company, but they do defense work. And then there are a couple of dozen other companies, we're all in Washington, D.C., and some are spread around the country, that are really doing the heavy lifting and the real work to protect this nation against all of the outside threats that we face on a daily basis. And what's interesting to me is that they are, well, a couple of reasons why I want to talk about this today. Number one, these companies are under the radar. Again, you've heard of the big companies. Lockheed is one of them. We talk about that a lot on the show. But much of the defense industry tends to kind of just fly under the radar. We see in our backyard here in the South, or in Georgia, if you're in Atlanta, you see Coca-Cola and Home Depot in our everyday lives. And it sometimes I think it makes it easier to relate back to that company and the product and the service that they have. So you live in Atlanta, you stare at the headquarters of Coca-Cola every day, you walk into Home Depot every day. You know, I feel pretty good about Home Depot. That's from a perspective of I feel comfortable with companies that I know. But most people don't know by name the key players in the defense space. Very interesting. Very, very few of you know what CACI is, C-A-C-I. Ever heard of that? Probably not. SAIC. Ever heard of that? Probably not. ManTech. Wait a minute. What do they do? These guys are playing a major role in protecting us on a daily basis. What does Leidos do? Wait a minute. Leidos. What do they make? What does Leidos do? Is that a fried chicken company? No, it's not. It's one of the biggest defense service and cyber security companies in America. So their work, very often, it's just unnoticed. So I want to bring to light some of the key players for an industry that can, to some extent, end up stealthing its way around the investment world or the investment conversation. And I know I dropped a couple puns in there. Those were intended. So number two, these companies are utility-like. The defense industry is utility-like. And by the way, we're going to get back to, so that's what we're talking about today. Defense, aerospace, protecting this nation, and the companies that do that. Now, I'm not pounding the table. You need to buy these companies right away and run off on Monday morning and go in and buy all these defense and aerospace and cybersecurity companies. I'm not saying that. I want them to be on your radar, and I want you to think about them. Sure, if you feel as though they fit for you, you go do some research, you ask your advisor if these might make sense, but I want to get these on your radar. I want to also talk about what I think this tax reform bill will do to the economy. Because right now, if you talk to 42 economists, 41 of them will say, you know what, over the next 5 to 10 years, we don't think it's going to do much. I disagree. I think it is a group of folks that has no idea what they're talking about. No idea. And I'm going to go through what the CBO missed last time in 03 and tell you just how far off the CBO was when it came to talking about the impact or the positive impact of taxes going lower. So let's go back to aerospace and defense. And by the way, we are live here this Sunday morning, 2 hours of Money Matters. So I'm here to answer your calls, your questions. Hey, Wes, I've got a pension or a lump sum or an annuity. I'm thinking about doing this or that, and I'm not quite sure. Can I run it by you? And yes, you can. That's exactly what we're doing here on a Sunday morning. So you're driving to church wondering about money. We're here to answer those questions before it's time for your service. So if you're headed to church, maybe you're going to play golf this morning. I don't know what it is, but we are here live on the radio. So the number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750. So defense companies, under the radar, one, two, utility-like. So we talk a lot about electric utility companies. We've talked about Southern Company, Con Ed, you name it, many, many times for many years here on Money Matters. And I've always liked utility companies. I've always owned utility companies. But this industry, many of these defense names have a very similarly steady revenue model, like the big utility companies. The end customer, very different, of course, but there is tremendous stickiness to the business that they do. Very difficult to find another industry that benefits more from government spending. And oh, by the way, the U.S. government is the biggest consumer of goods and services on the planet. U.S. government buys more of goods and services than pretty much any other source you can find. And that's what these defense companies tap into. So you think about the stickiness of a utility company, your Southern Company, you and I as consumers, we don't have a lot of choice. We're gonna use Southern Company. Ultimately, we're gonna use Georgia Power, or wherever you might live, those utility dollars for your electricity, in some way, shape, or form, they're going back to the parent company, Southern Company. Whether you're in Alabama, you're in Mississippi, not a whole lot of choice. It's a little bit like that in the defense industry. There are several big players or medium players that you and I haven't necessarily, I don't talk about a lot, you might not have heard of, but they get a pretty big chunk of the defense budget, and they do it year after year after year after year. Again, to some extent, like a utility. The third and very important piece of this is that I want to talk about what the defense industry calls the fifth realm. From a national security perspective, the military has nearly, of course, always focused on air, land, sea, right? Then space, now cyberspace. Cyber defense is now the fifth realm or the fifth domain to defend. And these firms are on the bleeding edge with their technology, which makes them an interesting investment choice or an interesting investment area to look at, along with their greater utility that is protecting our nation. And, oh, by the way, the U.S. defense budget, it's going up. It's going to go up in a very big way in the next 5 years, probably the next 10 years. That's a little far out to look at, but it's very difficult to make an argument that it's going down, because nowhere do you find a projection that shows less defense spending next year and the next year and the next year. You put all that together, you got to understand the space. It's and oh, by the way, it's a fascinating space to understand, because it'll make you feel better about it being American. You come back from D.C. after you meet with these companies, you think, wow, there's a lot of very smart people working around the clock to protect us and help the military protect us in partnership. So that's the topic here today on Money Matters. Good morning. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. 2 hour show. This is so much fun that we get back to 2 hours. And we're going to go to the phones, 404-872-0750. Craig joins us from Griffin. Craig, what's going on? How can I help? Craig, yeah, are you there?
Hey, Wes, good morning. Yeah, I'm here.
Man, as soon as I said hi, it sounded like you fell off the couch, man.
Okay, yeah, sorry about that. I hope not. I'm kind of driving down the highway.
Well, that would be, yeah. Let's hear it. What's going on?
I got a quick question for you. I've been closely monitoring this phenomenon of this Bitcoin and the Bitcoin trust funds here over the last couple of weeks. And understanding I guess I'm completely behind the eight ball in terms of the growth and everything. But I just wanted your opinion. I understand it's a risky stock. I was looked at the Bitcoin itself and kind of backed away from that because it didn't seem to be liquid. I wasn't interested in any cryptocurrency. However, I am kind of interested in this, I think it's GBTC. It's a Bitcoin trust fund that follows the market and appears to be more liquid.
Well,
it's really been doing good over the last couple of weeks since I first started monitoring it anyway.
Craig, if you feel like you don't understand it, you're not alone. I was at this defense conference this week, and part of why I wanted to take this call is that we did talk a lot about Bitcoin, and it used to be there was we had a session, a sit down with a non-publicly traded company. So let's call it a startup with a lot of venture backing. Let's call it $50 million of venture backing that is effectively trolling the deep and dark web. Yes, those are two separate things. And tracking criminals all around the world and trying to help law enforcement engage against in an undercover way on the deep dark web. Sounds like science fiction, but this is the world we live in now, to fight cybercrime and financial crime and theft. Interestingly, Bitcoin has become so mainstream that criminals don't really even use it anymore. So they're going to some of these other currencies in order to process nefarious transactions. That's how mainstream this has become as a payment. But from an investment standpoint, it's a whole nother ballgame. It's very difficult to value. And the swings have been so erratic. And I want to talk more about this. We got to go to a quick break. So, hey, Craig, stay on the road for me. Try not to veer off. I know we're talking Bitcoin. More of that when Money Matters returns right here, News 95.5, AM 750, WSB.
Live and festive in the Publix Holiday Headquarters studio at WSB.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
We are hopping this morning here. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. 41 degrees on Peachtree, and it's time to get back to the phones here. A lot of great calls. We're just going to go through this. A couple themes today. One, defense, how our nation and the private sector is helping the military fight in the fifth domain, the fifth realm, which is cybercrime and cyber threat. Defense budgets are going up. They're going up tremendously starting next year. And the companies that are there in D.C. and around the country are utility-like in capturing that market share. They understand the government's checkbook, and they've been doing this for decades, and they know where money's headed, and they're there to capture that business. And it makes these companies a very interesting space, not only from a national security perspective, but also from an investment perspective. For years, we talk about utilities. Here today, I want to start bringing to light the importance of the defense and the aerospace and the cybercrime defense industry after spending several days at a research conference in Washington, D.C. this week. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. Also today, I'm going to talk about this tax reform bill that's going to be voted on this coming week. Likely it gets right through, and what that means for the economy. We're going to go back to the phones here. And again, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I want to finish up with Craig. Craig, are you still on the road, my friend?
Yes, I am.
And your worry, well, you called about Bitcoin and said, look, you feel like you're a little bit lost, you're left behind. Have you invested in some Bitcoin, or where are you in this?
No, I haven't. I just in the beginning stages of considering it. I've actually had 100% of my 401k, as aggressive as it sounds, it's all been in my company stock, which is Cat stock, which has done great for the last several years.
Oh, you work for Caterpillar?
I do.
Oh, good. Okay.
And I've had 100% of my 401k in there, and it's had a great run. And now I'm finally at the point where I'm considering pulling some of it out and doing something a little different, maybe Bitcoin, maybe some other funds.
Well, you bring up, now that you brought up that you work for Caterpillar, there are a couple ways I've seen people really build tremendous wealth. One of them is to start and have your own business. Another one, and this is fairly rare actually, inherit a whole bunch of money. The other one that I see very often is just the ultra disciplined investor that husband, wife, maybe never made more than $120,000, $150,000 a year, but were so disciplined and started early, and they ended up $2, $3 million in the bank. Now, that's pretty rare, right? I see that a lot because those are the families that I've tended to work with over the last 20 years. But if you look at that on a percentage basis, Craig, not a lot of Americans get to that point. That's why you hear all these dire statistics about how in America, most people are going to be living on Social Security. Nobody really saves any money. And I can tell you, if you've got $2 or $3 million saved, you're in a very rarefied territory. You're in the right upper 1 or 2% of Americans that figured out a way or had the discipline to do it. But the next, and let's call this the third or fourth way I've seen people really build wealth, is working for a great company or a publicly traded company that has either been generous with their stock or had a stock that's done really well. Again, relatively few and far between. It's not like this happens every day. Caterpillar is one of those companies. So if you look at what Cat has done in the last, gosh, even 5 years, you're talking about a stock that's gone from 70 bucks to 145 bucks today. And if you look over a longer period of time, you've created tremendous, tremendous wealth. You go back into the early 90s, Cat was, call it 13 bucks. Today it's 145 bucks. So that is the kind of opportunity that you've taken advantage of where you can build serious, serious wealth. I don't, in my opinion, Bitcoin is not one of those things. In a big company like Caterpillar, which, since you mentioned that, I've seen this happen with good global brands, U.S. brands. I'd call Cat, obviously, U.S., but a global company because they sell big orange stuff all over the world. But you have a workforce. They're all working together day in and day out to advance the mission of the company, to earn a little bit more next year than this year, to create wealth for their shareholders, to create livelihoods for their employees. And that collectiveness has real value. These are companies that make real profits, real earnings, right? I would contrast that with something like Bitcoin. You're talking about polar opposites. Bitcoin has been an interesting investment because it's gone from, you know, two Papa John's pizzas were what? 10,000 Bitcoin. That was the first transaction. 10,000 Bitcoin for two Papa John's pizzas. Okay. Now you could buy 16 million Papa John's pizzas with that original 10,000 Bitcoin, right? So it has just been this moonshot in such a small period of time. It's fascinating. It's like a bright light and we're all moths to the light. But at some point, I don't see how the story doesn't end badly. But just like in 1998, as markets were getting overvalued, they kept going and getting more overvalued. 1999, same thing happened. I remember a colleague of mine said, you know, I'm going to short Yahoo. It's crazy. It doesn't really earn much. It should go down. Shorted it. He was right, but his timing was wrong. And he eventually lost just a ton of money because it just continued on. And that could happen here, is what I'm saying. Is that Bitcoin could do the very same thing. Bitcoin could continue to stay at this enormous valuation, continue to go. It's bringing more people into the fold, and then it could end very badly. So we just don't know about the timing. I look at this not as a currency, but like an option or any other really speculative investment. And you just got to be really, really careful. I have a little bit of Bitcoin. It's obviously worth more today than when I got it. Let's call it close to a year ago. I do not bet my retirement on it. I really don't. I think there's other great investments out there that are plenty risky enough for me and my money that you can still make a wonderful fortune on. And just because it's such a hot topic or a great topic of the day doesn't mean it's going to make a whole lot of new people rich. I could be wrong about that. But in my own opinion, I think there's a lot of other great areas to invest your money in that are 5 and 10 and 20 year investments where Bitcoin is really just the investment of the day. 404-872-0750, the number here in the studio. We're headed to Rick, who joins us from North Atlanta. Rick, good morning. What's going on? How can I help?
Hi, Wes. Happy holidays.
You too, my friend.
I wanted to ask your opinion on two mutual funds and one closed-end fund.
Love it. Let's do it.
The two mutual funds are Global Wellington and Global Wellesley from Vanguard. They're new funds. For a long time, you recommended 50% in Wellington and Wellesley. You haven't been doing that lately, I think, because there were some restrictions on Wellington. But these two new funds just came out a few months ago, and they have similar characteristics. So Wellington is 60% stocks, 40% bonds. Wellesley is 60% bonds, 40% stocks. The closed-end fund, I read your Barron's article, and you mentioned BHK, which is BlackRock Core Bond. In my readings, I came across a recommendation for BST, which is BlackRock Science and Technology. And this closed-end fund is 68% technology stocks, which don't yield much, if anything.
Okay, so
it has other stocks, like they're in their top 10 stocks, they have Visa and MasterCard.
So Rick, hang on 1 second.
An income.
Rick, let me ask you this. On the BlackRock closed-end fund, what was that second ticker symbol that you just said?
BST.
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 Got it. So we're doing some real-time work here. So let me answer that question first, because here's the deal. That is a So closed-end funds, for anyone that doesn't know what these are, they're similar. They're kind of a hybrid between a mutual fund and an ETF. It's effectively a basket of stocks. It has a manager like a mutual fund does. But what makes it closed-end is that once they issue, let's call it 1 million shares at the outset, they don't create or destroy shares. It stays that fixed amount of shares. That creates kind of an interesting dynamic that you don't see in open-ended mutual funds, and you really don't see it much in ETFs. Because it's a fixed number of shares, the underlying assets can trade, the net asset value, above the price or below the price. So very often you see these things trade at either discounts or premiums to what the assets inside the basket are really worth, right? Mm-hmm. And that creates a real opportunity, particularly with the bond closed-end fund side. And that's why for many, many years, we've utilized bond closed-end funds, because you can look at them and say, you know, this is trading at $10, it's worth $11, it's a good buy today because it's trading below its intrinsic price. And closed-end funds create that opportunity. It's not quite the same when you're looking at a stock closed-end fund. And that's what this is. BST, this BlackRock Science and Technology, is a stock closed-end fund. And not that I have a huge problem with stock closed-end funds, but they don't create the same opportunity. They're kind of expensive when it comes to accessing equities. And as far as the structure is concerned, I'm just not a big fan of using closed-end funds on the stock side, Rick. Fine on the bond side, because I can really understand the distribution rates, how they're trading relative to what they're really worth. It's not as easy to do that, Rick, on the stock closed-end fund side. So just my own personal preference, that's not something I would look at. Now, number two, let's go to Wellington. For many years, let's call it, go back 5, 6, 7 years before Wellington was closed to new investors, we talked about using Wellington and using Wellesley as a really nice kind of one-stop shop to have a balance between U.S. stocks and U.S. bonds and dividend-paying stocks. And that's why I've looked and liked these funds, because the way Wellington does it, similar to the way I typically invest. So I said, if you're an investor and you want just one mutual fund and you've got $50,000, take a look at Wellesley. Take a look at Wellington. They're kind of cousins within the Vanguard lineup. Unfortunately for investors, they got so big, Rick, that they got closed, and you can't put new money in them. So what Vanguard recently did is they opened up, again, another derivative, let's call it second cousin of Wellington, and now it's a global fund, which I, quite frankly, might even be better, because now international, it's only been in 2017 that international equities have kind of perked back up. The fact that Wellington has this very similar strategy, still dividend-paying stocks and relatively high-quality bonds, this new global Wellington, all it does is it opens you up to about 40% of the stock portion, which is 65% of the overall, to international. And you've got about 30% in Europe, which, or 25% in Europe, which I like, and then a little bit of exposure to the Asian markets. So I actually like this fund. I haven't bought it yet because it is fairly new. It's a smaller fund. It doesn't mean it's not going to get big. So from an overall asset allocation perspective and low cost, yes, I think it's a good, that's a fund that I like. It's certainly a fund that you should do some research on. Consider Vanguard Wellington Global, we're talking about. You're listening to Money Matters. We're going to do a quick news, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Minutes, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. We are back live here. Money Matters with Wes Moss here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. Back to 2-hour show, 404-872-0750. James on the line from Gainesville. James, good morning. How can I help?
Hey, morning, Wes. I wanted to ask you, everybody's kind of crazy about this cryptocurrency. And I wanted to ask you what you know about Ripple. It's XRP is the cryptocurrency, but it's backed by the company Ripple. I know that it's got some major backers from Amex. It's the only cryptocurrency Google has, said that they would support. Some major investment, financial investors in the U.S. are backing it. And it's it's decentralized more so than Bitcoin is. And I just wanted to see if you knew anything about it, what your impression is on it, because I'm interested in it. I put a little bit of money into it, but and I want to put more into it really bad. I'm kind of hesitant to do so.
So again, you're right. It could emerge here as kind of one of the survivors. So Mike Arrington, he's the TechCrunch guy, the TechCrunch founder. He announced that he's going to open a fund, crypto fund, and it's going to be denominated in XRP. So here's actually what I think is going to happen, James. And as we're getting calls here about different cryptocurrencies, and of course Bitcoin and Litecoin and Ripple, and again, I think Ripple has an interesting case because it's more of a network, and they're going to use XRP as the currency. So I think the crypto or the blockchain technology that the company Ripple is using, it could be very legitimate. But I think what's going to happen is a lot like in 98, 99, when ultimately at all these companies that came in, they were overvalued. Many of them got effectively eliminated in the tech crash. I think that's what happens here, where you might have 10, 15, 20 cryptocurrencies that get hot for a while. I think one or two or three might survive, just like how Cisco survived and Intel and Qualcomm, but there are a bunch that went by the wayside. Webvan, gone. Pets.com, gone. Tons of companies, gone. I think the same thing happens here with an influx of new cryptocurrencies. You're going to get some sort of crash, but some survivors along the way. Stay tuned for the 10 o'clock hour of Money Matters right here, News 95.5, AM 750, WSB.